Good morning again. An annual tradition at our house. But you know what? The tree never quite looks the same. I mean, every year we put it in the same place. I mean, there's really only one place in the living room it'll fit. And well, it's an artificial tree. So after you take it out the box and you unfold all the branches and you put it all out there, it pretty much takes the same shape. And well, the lights, well, the one we had a few years ago, there was only one way to put them on, but now the lights are built into the tree. So there's really only one way that those are supposed to work. But then we get to the ornaments. And pretty much, they're the same ornaments that we've been using for years and years and years and years. Maybe somewhere along the way we picked up one or two or during the year, or maybe as we were taking the tree down from the year before, something got broken, so it's not there. But pretty much, it's the exact same ornaments. So why is it never the same? Because I don't remember where we put the ornaments from year to year. I mean, we pack them in a box, and we put the bubble wrap on them, and we put them out in the shed, and there they sit for a year, and we bring them back out, and we don't have a Christmas ornament map, where this one has to go there, and this one has to go there. So kind of what we do when we begin to decorate our Christmas tree is we randomly begin to pull out ornaments, and then we randomly pick a spot to hang said ornament on the tree. And then after we've got everything on the tree that we want to have on the tree, we kind of step back and we look at the tree and we decide, well, we got too many in this spot, and not enough in this spot, and this has got a bare spot. And then we move the ornaments around, and then we all stand back and we look at the tree and we're like, it's all done. Now, this process, it's kind of fun for Christmas trees. Who wants a cookie-cutter Christmas tree, right? Hopefully we don't have anybody in our congregation that you have your tree and you put a plastic bag over it and you move it downstairs and the next year you just bring it back up and you pull the plastic and it's all done. Ta-da. Oh, we got somebody waving at me. Who wants a cookie-cutter Christmas tree? The randomness makes it kind of fun. But when it comes to life, we don't like random, do we? We don't like our events just to happen to us. You see, random means made, done, happening, or chosen without method or conscious decision. And again, random is okay for Christmas trees, but when it comes to my life, I want a plan. I want B to follow A and C to follow B and then the little numbers to go right after, and I want everything nice and neat and organized because humans, we have an insatiable desire to find meaning and purpose in everything in our life. We long to have some kind of comprehensive explanation of history and experience. It ensures that there's purpose to everything in life. And it ensures that we think this story that we're living, that we call our life, it's going somewhere. That's what I want. Then we get around and we try to explain this and we use these phrases. And tell me if you've ever preached this sermon at one of your kids or somebody else or something happens in their life. And so this is what the things that we like to say. Everything happens for a reason, right? Everything happens for a reason. Have you ever said that to somebody? This is one of those things that every time we get a tragedy in our life, well, it's got to have a purpose, right? I don't believe in coincidences. Yeah, I've used that statement before. I put it out there. How about this one? I heard of this one a whole bunch in my 20s, okay? You just haven't met the right person yet. Like, there's somebody out there that God baked and said, yeah, this is the one for Barry, and it's all set aside, and it's gift-wrapped and earmarked, and you just haven't met the right person yet. I guess it just wasn't meant to be. You know, when we have things that happen in our life and the consequences we have to deal with, somebody always comes on and says, you know what, just move on. It just wasn't meant to be. Just get over it. And you know, as Christians, we like to connect the dots, although we have another term. We call it a God thing. And when I say it's a God thing, here's what we do. When tragedy strikes, what's the question we always want to ask? Why? I mean, why do some people have to struggle with cancer? Why do little kids have to deal with issues? Why, oh, why did this have to happen? Why did we have coronavirus? Why do we want explanations for everything that's happening in our life. We want suffering to connect to something purposeful, don't we? I mean, we want these things that I'm dealing with to actually have something to do with something. We just don't want things out there. We naturally assume that there has to be a purpose. And we bake all of this in and we put this all around God. And when we begin to really look at things and we put God in the middle of it, we begin to find out that the world isn't as random as we might think. It isn't. There really is a story. And it's a big story. It's a story that started all the way back at the beginning of time, has come all the way here. It's a big story. There really is a story. And life, it's connected. My life is connected to your life, and your life is connected to other people's life, and there is a connection in all of these events that happen. There is no such thing necessarily as random events. You see, you have to remember, it's a God thing. And God has a take. You see, God not only drops us in to remind us, why do random events seem to happen? Because sometimes we need a reminder of who's in control. Honestly, how many people have felt in control during 2020? If you raise your hand, please come see me. Everything has been out of control, and sometimes God just needs to remind us, I'm in control. Sometimes he has to throw these things that we call random events into our path to reorient us. We've gone off the wrong direction. We've gotten off of our purpose pattern. We're doing the wrong thing, maybe for all the right reasons, but it's not working. And so God said, fine. It's like a glorified speed bump in the middle of the parking lot. It's going to change your direction. Sometimes God has to put these events in because those random events are actually the ligaments and the tissue and the muscle that connects one event to the other, those big events in our life. I remember when we were struggling with things when Caleb was young and we were dealing with his illness, we asked ourselves, God, what were you doing with our lives at that point? And it's kind of funny, we didn't figure it out until after the fact what God was doing. All of those things that were random events in our life, they had purpose and meaning for what God was planning for our life. And sometimes these events that God throws into our life, we're supposed to use them kind of like looking at the stars to get our bearings, to figure out where we are so that we can figure out where I go next. You see, these random events have meaning in our life. And you know what? They're all about a story. Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. When we get to Easter, we like to go to Matthew. Matthew has this really cool account of the Easter story. And when we get to Christmas, good old Dr. Luke, he seems to have everything in order, and he gives us a nice picture of how things unfolded. But as you're looking at these four verses, I want you to zero in on that last verse that I read. Verse 4. Luke has a purpose in what he's writing. He wants you to know the certainty of the things that you have been taught. That's the purpose. That's the reason every single year, while the characters in the story don't change, and while the manger doesn't change, and the things that we do don't change, and it seems like, oh my gosh, how many times can you retell this story? You do get. We retell the story so that we will begin to, again, know the certainty of the things that we have been taught. And so this morning, here we go again. We're going to tell the Christmas story again. And you know what? We're going to do it again on Thursday night, just kind of from a different perspective. And so this story for Luke begins in Luke chapter 1, verses 26 through 37. So verses 26 to 27. In the 6 months of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent an angel to Gabriel to the Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of the virgin's, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. So it mentions here right at the beginning that this is at the 6 month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. We'll get into that in just a minute. She is a relative of Mary, and I don't know if Mary knew that she was pregnant or not. I mean, there was no Facebook. There was no Twitter. You think our post office is slow. Theirs was really slow. I don't know how the news got where it needed to be. I don't know if Mary was already aware that Elizabeth was pregnant. But he shows up, and he begins to give this message. There was quite a buzz about the angel appearing to Elizabeth, but now here he is with Mary. But I'm sure as that was the introduction, Mary looked at the angel and said, what's that got to do with me? I mean, I've got other things in my random life that I'm planning for. Haven't you heard? I'm getting married. I mean, I've got that to worry about. This is an event that has been on my calendar since, you know what, I was a child. After all, this was an arranged marriage. And you know what? This marriage is important to me because this is my security. Of course, the word around was just, it was another marriage. Think about it. There was nothing special about Mary and Joseph's marriage. It was just another arranged marriage. These things happened all the time. They were always getting married. It was just part of life. It was just another random event. And you know, we make a big deal about Mary and Joseph, but while those names mean something to us today, they may as well have been John and Jane all the way back then. And we make a big deal about the fact that they were related to David. Keep in mind that people probably thought, related to David, who cares? That kingdom has been dormant for hundreds and hundreds of years. Heir to a throne? Come on, folks. He's a carpenter. She's a nobody. They would probably live the rest of their days in Galilee, not far from where they grew up. In other words, they were just another couple of nameless, faceless, random people to walk the planet. That is, until God decides to take their random story and he begins to weave it into his master plan. Continuing with our story. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call his name Jesus." Like the introduction there? Favored with God. That's how he addressed her. What kind of greeting is that? I mean, keep in mind, she is literally here in virgin territory. Nobody had talked to an angel in years, except for maybe the guy that they're calling crazy who can't talk anymore. She didn't know, was the angel here to deliver a good message? Or maybe he was there to tell her it was about a bad message. You see, life wasn't a series of random events. Mary, God's getting ready to do something. I've come here today to tell you, you found favor with God. You're to the front of the line. Congratulations, Mary. You have been chosen to be pregnant out of wedlock. Here's how the story continues. You will conceive and give birth to a son. You are to call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him his throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. His kingdom will never end. Now, how's this for a curveball? She's thinking white dresses and weddings, and now she's got to start thinking about cribs and nurseries. Man, that's got to be quite an event that she's thinking about. I mean, and by the way, this isn't going to just be any baby. The one that you're about to get, he's the Son of God, Mary. I'm going to give you that. How's that for a nice random curve to your Christmas? He's the king of the universe. Mary, he's the one that created everything in the past, and he's the one that's going to restore everything in the future. And you would think Mary would be like, cool, favored with God. Oh, no. Like so often happens when God reveals his purpose and it upsets my plan and his random events seem to don't coincide with what I thought I was going to be doing. Well, I have a problem. Listen to Mary's response. How will this be, Mary asked the angel, since I am a virgin? The angel answered, the Holy Spirit will come on you and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One will be born, will be called the Son of God. Again, he brings up the point. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. And she who is said to be unable to conceive in her sixth month, for no word from God will ever fail. Now, how's this for a weird conversation? The angel shows up and tells Mary she's going to have a baby. And this teenage girl decides to give God a sex ed lesson. God, I know where babies come from. And just so you know, I'm a good girl and I haven't. Okay? So you've come to the wrong address. Obviously, you got your mark wrong because you took a left when you should have taken a right because you're in the wrong place because this can't be happening. Now, the thing is that the angel had to give Mary a little bit of a lesson. Now, a lesson that maybe we need to learn. You see, Mary, you're just looking at a series of random events. One thing that happens after another, that happens after another, that happens after another, and you can't see the connection. But Mary, I want you to understand something. I made a woman that was barren and old conceive. And if I can do that, then you know what? Your problems are not any bigger. I can do this for you also. You see, Mary had to get into the mode that I am part of God's plan. These random events that I want to think about going through and this thing that I have my life all planned out, sometimes God throws those events into our life, again, to remind, to reorient, to connect some dots, and also to give us some bearings of where we're supposed to go. Because here's the reality. It's not random. The events that happened of the first Christmas, they just were not random. It's like God showed up in history and said, don't you understand? This is all about my master plan. This is about the will of God. Every one of those kingdoms and every one of those governments and every one of those empires and all of those things in history, they have come and gone. But you know what? I am forever. And when you look at the details of history, how oftentimes do we not see his hand? But understand, life is not a series of random Christmas ornaments that God just unpacked out of the box and just put here and there wherever he wanted and looked back and said, good enough. God is a God of order. God is a God that makes things happen because he has a plan, a purpose, and his will. Now, the angel goes away, and Mary doesn't hear from the angel again. And things go back to being random for her. Only they got worse. I mean, favorite of God? Think about what this young lady was put through. Next thing you know, she's riding pregnant on a donkey from Nazareth to Bethlehem. Okay, now, so that you can put that in perspective, that's about 80 miles, okay? 9 months pregnant on the back of a donkey. Now, I've never personally been pregnant, but I know lots of people have, and I don't know anybody that's 9 months pregnant that would sign up for a donkey ride for 80 miles. And we're not talking about paved roads here. We're talking about dirt paths and over and under, and sleeping outside in the outside. Maybe they took a tent. I don't know what they did, but she's 9 months pregnant. You'd think if this was favored by God, he could have come up with a better plan than that. I mean, who does a census this time of year when I'm 9 months pregnant? How random is that, that just because some king decided he wanted to tax us, I have to set my life aside and do things different. As she's taking this trip, everybody's staring at her. She's showing. She's 9 months pregnant. And do you really think she can go and tell them the story? I mean, if somebody's walking down the road with them and they see that she's 9 months pregnant and they notice that she's not wearing the wedding ring and they begin to make their judgment, you think she really wants to stop and say, don't worry about it. This came from an angel. Okay? Don't worry about it. The baby and me, I didn't. God gave it to me. Okay? You really think she wants to go with that? That's probably not a good plan. So she just has to get on this donkey and ride, and as people pass by and they murmur and they stare at her, she just has to keep moving. She just has to keep going. And then she arrives at Bethlehem, and you would have think God could have rolled out the red carpet, right? God could have had it all set up. Oh, no, misfavor of God gets there. And the journey had taken so long, and there were no rooms. And so she and Joseph had to go stay in a stable, a space that was set aside for animals, donkeys and cows and sheep. And there she is in the middle of it. You think she felt very favored by God at that point? Come on, God, you could have at least arranged a bed, maybe a nurse, somebody to help. We often miss the fact, you know who probably delivered the baby? Joseph. The rough hands of a carpenter were the first hands to touch this newborn babe. How random is that? Come on, God. You're supposed to be putting the pieces together so that I understand them. No. He's putting the pieces together so that the world would be able to see he is totally in control. See, the events didn't end. There they were, and they had the baby, and they were ready to go, and all of a sudden they get the random news that Herod wants to kill their child. So you know what that means, right? Back on the donkey. Now with 2-year-old in your possession on the donkey with you, heading off to Egypt, which is another 200 miles from where you are. Anybody sign up for a 200-mile ride donkey trip with a 2-year-old? Yeah, I don't see anybody willing to say, yeah, that's me. I don't think so. Then Mary gets the worst news imaginable. Here she is in Egypt, and the telegram shows up, and Herod decided to kill all the babies that were 2 years old and younger. He went into such a ferocious rage and such random acts of violence. He decided to kill all the Jewish babies, males, 2 years and under. Gone. And here's Mary in Egypt. And you know it's got to be going through her mind, right? It's my fault. God, you called me favorite of God. Where's the favor? I'm responsible for all of these children's deaths. I'm responsible for all of these random acts of violence that are just awful for my people. God, it's my fault, right? I did something. This wasn't a favor of God. That greeting back when you said favored one, what you meant is cursed one, right? You think Mary felt that sometimes? We see several times in Scripture where it kept saying that Mary pondered it all in her heart. She just kept thinking about it and thinking about it. All of these random events. And it ends, right? Oh, no. No. Then one day, 30 years into the future, Miss Favorite of God would have to listen as her God-given son is nailed to a cross. He would be beaten within an inch of his life. He would be hung there in disgrace. Another senseless, random act of the Roman government, right? I mean, Jesus was a nobody, a would-be teacher from a long-forgotten society. From everyone's perspective, this was just another random execution. They happened all the time. I mean, there was a special way they did this, and it was just something that kept happening and happening and happening. And from Mary's perspective, who cares? It's just one more broken heart of a Galilean woman. I mean, she'll get over it. She has other kids. It's not like he's the only one. See, we saw that they see this as a random event in that moment. But fast forward about 2,000 years. Were any of those events random? No. They were giant pieces in a puzzle that God had been assembling for thousands and thousands of years to give us the Messiah, Jesus, the ultimate Christmas gift. Mary's pain, our gain. Mary's endurance of random events ultimately led to the fact that we have the ability to have an open relationship with God. Life just isn't that random, is it? God's got a purpose and a plan for every single piece that he puts into our life. We've been talking all year long about living faith, and here's my last shout out for living faith in 2020. We keep trying to say living faith. We're trying to have faith that moves God. We're trying to have a faith that gets God's attention on my life. We're trying to have a faith that has God to do something mighty in my life. That's not living faith. If you take nothing else out of 2020, if you forget every single sermon that we preach, don't forget this statement. Living faith is faith that moves us to trust in God when he doesn't seem to be moving. Living faith is the faith that allows me to trust in God's plan even when I can't see where the plan is going. Living faith is that when it looks like God has left, I still trust that he's there. This is the point of how we live our faith. And this is the point of why he had to put these messages together and these events together. That while Mary looked at them, they seemed so random and so senseless. God, what do you mean this is your plan? I could come up with 100 different ways that this would work better than what you did. But God said, this is my plan, my will. See, living faith is to respond to the seemingly random events of life as if they are part of the perfect plan of God. Can I explain why we've had a worldwide pandemic this year? Absolutely not. But I know who can. God, who sees the bigger picture. Can I explain why we had to shut our church down for a few months at the beginning and we couldn't come to the building and we had all these rules and stipulations? Nope. If you're waiting for an explanation from me, you're in the wrong department. They didn't brief me at all on what the reason was. God didn't say, yeah, this is the plan. But here's what I do know. God had a purpose for it. How do I know? Because it happened. Can I explain to you why we have so much social unrest in our world? Can I explain to you why we're dealing with all the issues? No, I can't. But here's what I can tell you. God did not abandon the wheel. He's still in control. Paul puts it this way in Ephesians chapter 1, verse 11. In him we were chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will. A lot of times we like to quote Romans 8:28, that all things work out for our good, and we kind of forget the second part. I love this verse even more. You know what? Sometimes my good is because it's God's will. Sometimes I just kind of have to roll with what God deals me and understand that he's got a picture that's bigger than me. Our friend Mary put it a little less theological. I am the Lord's servant. May it be to me as you have said. I don't understand why you've picked me, God. Lord, I have a life planned. I've got a wedding to do. Everybody's expecting. Do you know to be pregnant how much I'm going to have to take out my wedding dress? Do you know how much those things cost? She could have went to all the reasons this would not work. You know what my parents are going to think? Who's going to explain this to Joseph? What do I know about raising a kid? I'm not even married yet. I could have given all of these reasons, but I love what she said when she was finished with this lesson. What did she say? Sure. Whatever you say, God, we'll do that. Even if it upsets your life? Yeah. Even if the plans that you have made have to go by the wayside? Yeah. Even if it's going to cause you heart, yeah. Lord, I'm going to do it your way. Just because I don't understand it, it's okay. I know it's what you want for my life. See, it's not random. What we've been taking part in is a divine story. What if Mary had said no? If Mary had looked at that angel and looked at Gabriel and said, I don't think so. No way. I'm not going to endure this. Do you think God would have moved to someone else or forced it? I don't know. But of course, God went to her not because she was this wonderful person, but because he knew that she was willing to do it his way. And that's the lesson that we need to take out of Christmas. We could take any one of the characters from Christmas and make the same story work, whether it be Joseph or the shepherds or the wise men. They all had to deal with the randomness of life, and they still had to end up doing it God's way. That's the story of Christmas. Can I promise 2021 is going to be any better than 2020? Nope. I can't. I have no idea what the future holds. I have no idea what kind of curves we're going to have swung at us next year. But here's what I do know. It's all part of God's divine story. And at the end of the story, spoiler alert, God wins. Okay? The question is do you want to be a part of the story? In a few minutes, I'm going to ask the worship team to come up, and we're going to do our closing song. If you're here today and you've never unwrapped this present of Jesus, catch me before you leave. We'll sit down and talk about what it means to be a Christian.